signing up for health insurance on the ACA Marketplace. If you're planning to sign up for Obamacare, you might want to get cracking. The deadline this year is December 15th. It is a shorter enrollment period than in years past. In 2018, about 70,000 Mainers got their coverage through the health insurance marketplace created by the Affordable Care Act. Those numbers may drop in the upcoming year, in part because there is no longer a penalty for not signing up. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we will discuss this and other changes to the ACA, and we'll answer any of your questions about the plans available, what to consider for your own coverage, how to sign up, and what might be in store for the future of health insurance here in Maine and across the nation. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is almost deadline time for the Affordable Care Act's open enrollment period, which ends December 15th. Well, today we will get answers to your ACA questions. With me in our studio, Hillary Barter. She's a healthcare navigator coordinator for Western Maine Community Action. Kate Endy is Consumer Assistance Program Manager for Consumers for Affordable Healthcare. And Joanne Raleigh-Secunda is Director of the Consumer Healthcare Division of the Maine Bureau of Insurance. Joining us also from the studios of Kaiser Health News in Washington, D.C., Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. We have an all-star panel here today, and as always, this show is about you. What questions do you have about signing up for the Affordable Care Act, or more broadly speaking, what questions do you have about the future of health insurance? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Julie, we're going to start with you. Major changes this year in the healthcare marketplace. What are those and how did they come about?
Well, the big change, of course, is that people are no longer required to either have insurance or pay a penalty with their taxes next year. So there's the mandate still exists in the law that most people, you know, unless you have a good excuse, are required to have insurance. But if you don't have insurance, you're not going to have to pay. There's also considerably less help available. The Trump administration cut the budget dramatically for people who help people sign up. So as we get towards the end of this sign-up period, if you're going to need help, you should really seek it soon. And overall, we're seeing a pretty stable exchange. There's more plans that are entering, even some new ones in Maine. And the plans in general are making more money, so they've not raised premiums a lot this year. And of course, I think we'll get to this. The Trump administration allowed expanded use of these short-term plans as an alternative to the compliant plans that don't offer quite as many benefits. I think that's pretty much the top line.
All right. Well, Hillary, how do these changes translate for the consumers? What are you seeing with signups so far?
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. So far, we have a group of 8 organizations with navigators in Maine this year.
And navigators is a fancy word for helpers, people who help you, right?
Exactly. Yeah, okay. That's right. So we meet in person with many people during this open enrollment period, and we also help over the phone. But the cuts have meant that we have fewer agencies that we're partnering with this year, down to 8 from about 11 last year, and fewer navigators on staff. However, we have a really strong team all across Maine, and we've been very busy this entire open enrollment period, working with a lot of people. And so while we have seen our numbers decrease a little bit, we've still been booked solid, and we have some availability, so should contact us.
How many fewer navigators are there throughout the state than there were last year?
Well, this year we have about 10 paid navigators as well as another 10 volunteer navigators. But last year we had upwards of 30, mostly paid navigators. So our numbers have gone down, but we've really tried to do the best that we can to keep up capacity, especially during open enrollment period.
Are you worried that in the last couple of weeks that people won't be able to get an appointment?
Our navigators are in many cases you know, they do have full schedules. However, they've been working really hard to be flexible and try to get in everyone who needs assistance. We also do collaborate and refer people to other assisters in the state. There are many assisters who work out of hospitals and federally qualified health centers. So if a navigator isn't available, often there is another individual locally who could be referred to.
Okay. Well, Kate, Governor-elect Mills says that her first priority, first day, I guess that's January 2nd, will be Medicaid expansion. How does that affect all this? How many people who might have been signing up for the ACA will qualify for Medicaid? How many people who didn't qualify for the ACA will now qualify for Medicaid?
So over 70,000 Mainers are expected to be eligible for Medicaid expansion, newly eligible, I should say. And some of those people who are falling between 100 and 138% of the federal poverty level, so the small section of the income spectrum, are going to actually be eligible for expansion who currently could be eligible for a marketplace plan. And so what we're telling folks to do is that if they're eligible for a marketplace plan now, go ahead, apply, and enroll. And you can also submit an application for Main Care, but that application takes a lot longer to process, and there have been some delays with implementing expansion, as you alluded to. So we're telling them to apply for both, and once your Main Care actually becomes active, then you can go ahead and cancel your marketplace plan.
Okay. Joanne, I've been reading about, and Julie mentioned these controversial short-term plans that are now allowed. But I know that some states ban them, some states limit them. What's available in Maine? What's Maine's law around short-term plans? And actually, why don't I even back up a little bit and say, what is a short-term plan?
Okay, a short-term plan is a plan that has a term of less than 365 days. And what the federal guidance that just came out, that's still the short-term plans that are available still have to go by Maine law, which the Maine law has a somewhat higher threshold than the federal law. So, for example, the Maine law, they can only do a 24 months, so you could have two short-term plans consecutive, and that's it. And they are subject to things like state mandates, which include some of the preventive health services for free, the same way that the major medical plans have to provide those preventive services for free. It does mean that they are not subject to all the essential health benefits. So things like maternity care or pharmacy care could potentially not be covered. And they do allow some dollar limits for very specific services. So Maine right now has three short-term plans: Independence American Insurance Company, National Health Insurance Company, and we think Everest Reinsurance Company is still selling online. We did have one insurance company just pull out of the short-term market not that long ago.
Okay. Kate?
And I would just also add, so in addition to missing some of the core benefits, these plans also don't have to provide protections for people with pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
And so if you've had any symptom of a condition, even if you haven't been diagnosed within the past 12 months, they can potentially deny all care related to that condition.
All right. Well, Julie, we're talking about short-term plans coming onto the market. The fact that there's no longer a penalty, and because of that, healthy people may not be applying at the same rate for health insurance. What does this mean long-term for the ACA?
Well, this is a big concern. There was initially the worry, particularly with the elimination of the penalty for not having insurance, that healthy people just wouldn't buy insurance, and that the risk pool, the people who buy their own insurance, would get sicker and sicker and sicker, and premiums would go up. They wouldn't be able to spread the costs. Same concern with the short-term plans, that these might make more sense for healthier people who think they're not going to use coverage and, you know, don't really need a comprehensive package of benefits that's required in the marketplaces. And that if all the healthy people were to leave the pool, then you'd only have the sick behind. What seems to be happening, and obviously we won't know this for several years, but it looks like the premium subsidies, that the help that people can get affording their premiums, has kept an awful lot of people in the market Yes, nationally, signups are lagging a little bit behind last year. I looked, Maine's are lagging, but very slightly. Maine seems to be down about 5%. This was halfway through the six-week signup period. And it looks like people's ability to get a good deal on insurance is sort of overriding their concern that they might have to pay a tax penalty, or perhaps even their desire to go out and buy a cheaper short-term plan.
Mm. Do we expect with a new Congress to see more changes, or are we, because there's going to be a Republican president and a Democratic Congress, do we expect really not much to happen this year at all?
We expect really not much to happen this year at all. Well, there'll be a Democratic House, but a Republican Senate and a Republican president. This is one place where they do not agree very much. There's an outside possibility that they could do some things around the edges that were considered last year but not done, like do more reinsurance, something that Senator Susan Collins has been pushing. Perhaps reinstate the cost-sharing payments, which the President Trump eliminated last year, threw the market into a little bit of turmoil. It seemed to it recovered from that, but the way it recovered is actually costing taxpayers more money, which is complicated to explain. But it's not how anybody expected that would turn out. So it's hard to know what, if anything, they could do. There may be some reinforcing of the idea that people with pre-existing conditions should be protected. And then, of course, we're all waiting to see what happens in this lawsuit in Texas, where a number of Republican attorneys general are challenging the constitutionality of the entire law, given that the mandate penalty has gone away. So that could force Congress's hand to do something, but I wouldn't otherwise expect much of very large significance.
Joanne.
I just want to build on something that Julie just mentioned about reinsurance. I want to first off explain what reinsurance is, which is, when insurance companies are looking at pricing their products, they don't like risk. So the more risk they feel like they're taking, the higher they're going to price their products. So they have reinsurance in order to have the reinsurance pool take that high risk, and then they can lower their premiums. Why that becomes really important here in Maine is because this past year, Maine got approved by the federal government to restart the Maine Guaranteed Access Reinsurance Association, or MGARA, because nobody feels like saying the Maine Guaranteed Access Reinsurance Association multiple times. And the purpose of that is to stabilize the market. And so it's not dropping the rates, but the rates are going up at a much lower rate than they would have otherwise. And without getting into the weeds, I mean, because we are using MGARA and having this reinsurance in the individual market, the people who are not eligible for subsidies aren't looking at a ginormous spike in the rates the way they would have been otherwise. So, you look at the carriers that are coming in this year, Anthem's prices, their average rate has actually gone down slightly. Community Health Options is actually staying exactly right around the same place, and Harvard Pilgrims has gone up very slightly, and that's in very large part due to MGARA.
Kate?
And I would just add that, even if premium prices for some of these companies have gone up, as premiums go up, for folks who qualify for financial assistance in the marketplaces, so does their tax credit amount. Which means that for most people, which in Maine, more than 8 out of 10 people who have marketplace plans qualify for financial assistance, then they really shouldn't see any difference in their premium prices as long as they shop around. And that's what's really important, because the plan that was the cheapest last year might not be this year. And so in order to get the same ballpark price that they've been paying, they may need to shop around and choose a new plan, but they should be able to get coverage for the same price.
And Hillary, we were talking about shopping around, and we were talking about navigators. You don't have to use a navigator, right? Many people are able to do this on their own on the website.
Yeah, absolutely. Many people encounter no difficulties, use the website to submit an application, then they browse the plans that are available to them and select a plan. That works for many people. Some people call a navigator if they have a question partway through, and that's enough to get them through to the end. And other people prefer to have more assistance. It really all depends on the individual.
And it's healthcare.gov.
Exactly, yes. We hear fairly often that people have mistakenly gone to other websites with similar names, such as healthcare.com. And so I would absolutely emphasize the importance of going to healthcare.gov in order to access these affordability programs through the Affordable Care Act.
Julie, I've read that the enrollment period is shorter this year. How much shorter is it, and how did that happen?
Well, it's 6 weeks instead of 12, that's the same as it was last year. I should mention that when the Affordable Care Act was first passed, the very first enrollment period was several months long. I think it went from October till the end of April. And I think they've been gradually trying to shorten it. You know, Medicare's open enrollment period is also only 6 weeks long. So the idea was that, you know, it should be relatively short eventually once people got used to using the Affordable Care Act. But last year, I think there had been still been sort of so many changes and people were very confused and it seemed very abrupt to make it that much shorter. But even at half the length last year from the year before, there was almost the same amount of people who signed up. There was, I think, just much more attention being paid and many people out, you know, with the drumbeat, you know, the people who were used to signing up in January, you suddenly had to tell them, you know, you don't have Christmas vacation to do this anymore. You have to do it before December 15th. The same is true this year.
And another question to you, Julie. You mentioned earlier that there's possibly some sort of move in Congress to cement provisions about pre-existing conditions. What about the young people being able to be covered under their parents' plan? That is still a part of the Affordable Care Act, correct? And is there any movement to sort of solidify that in other kind of legislation?
There probably doesn't need to be pending what happens with this court case in Texas. Although if the court case, there's two possibilities in that court case. The attorneys general who filed it said that they want the judge to declare the entire law unconstitutional, which would be a lot bigger deal than just the kids under 26, although those they would be important too. But the Trump administration came back and said, you know, without the mandate penalty, we don't think the whole law is unconstitutional, but maybe just the pre-existing condition protections part, because they're so tightly wedded to that. So there's a possibility that the judge would strike down just the pre-existing conditions part. I should point out that whatever this judge does, it will be appealed to the appeals court and then likely to the Supreme Court. And it's likely that somewhere along the line, another judge will stay the ruling if the judge were to find these things unconstitutional. So nothing's likely to actually happen for the next couple of years, but it will create more uncertainty. And that's why I said it might prompt Congress to act, just because so many Democrats and Republicans ended up running on promises to protect people with pre-existing conditions.
Well, we're talking about the Affordable Care Act. Lots of questions already coming in. We'll get to those after the break. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Seniors Plus, Western Maine's agency on aging. Meals on Wheels and more for older adults, disabled adults, and caregivers. SeniorsPlus.org.
On the next Fresh Air, how the British paper The Guardian partnered with Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks to publish classified documents and the consequences the paper faced. We talk with The Guardian's former editor-in-chief, Alan Rusbridger. His new book, Breaking the News, tells those stories and others and looks at the challenges newspapers face in the digital age. Join us.
You can listen to Fresh Air this evening at 7 on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is the media sponsor of Portland Ovation's classical series, including a performance by the Dover Quartet at Hannaford Hall on the University of Southern Maine Portland campus on Thursday evening, December 6th. The program will include works by Tchaikovsky, Dvorak, and more. Maine Public members are eligible for 10% off tickets to the concert. For details on the event and how to take advantage of the Maine Public member discount, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, signing up for the ACA. Joining me today, Joanne Rawlings-Secunda, Director of the Consumer Healthcare Division of the Maine Bureau of Insurance. Hillary Barter, Healthcare Navigator Coordinator for Western Maine Community Action. Kate Endy, Consumer Assistance Program Manager for Consumers for Affordable Healthcare. And joining us from the studios of Kaiser Health News in Washington, D.C., Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Colley, or post to our Facebook page. I'll start with what I hope is a quick and easy one from Michael. How can I become a volunteer navigator next year?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I would suggest that Michael contact me. We have a statewide navigator hotline number, and that's a great way to reach us at Western Maine Community Action. I think that's a role of growing importance these days. We have some really wonderful volunteers who have joined us this year and been trained and are helping consumers. So we'd be very happy to hear from the caller.
Do you know the number off the top of your head?
Yeah, it's 855-806-7333.
Okay, and we'll try to post that on our Facebook page as well. Speaking of Facebook, Nancy says, my income is $10,000 annually, single, and I currently have coverage under the ACA. Love it. How soon will MaineCare be implemented? Do I stay on my ACA plan until then, or will I have to pay back any expenses I have incurred? Kate, you've gotten that question before, I'm sure.
Yes, we have. And so when you're going in and $10,000 annually for somebody who's single, so they really would be in the MaineCare expansion group. And so we would encourage you to apply for MaineCare right now. And even though you may be denied, you can appeal that decision within 30 days of when you get that denial. And there's really great template letters where you basically just write in your name and your birthday and mail it in that we have available. And so, you know, appeal it. And then once it is implemented in the new year, you would actually be able to get retroactive MaineCare up to 3 months from before you even applied. And so I would encourage this person to call our helpline and we can help walk them through the process. And that's 1-800-965-7476.
All right. Again, we'll get that onto our Maine Calling Facebook page and web page. Thank you, Nancy, for your question. We'll move to Mark in Portland. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering, I keep hearing about a government shutdown. Would that shut down the healthcare marketplace, or would you still be able to sign up for Obamacare?
Julie, that sounds like a question for you.
It is, and I am pleased to say, the Department of Health and Human Services has had its budget funded for the entire year. For the first time in 22 years, Congress passed on time the appropriations bill for HHS and the Departments of Labor and Education. So if there is a government shutdown, the Department of Health and Human Services will not be affected because their budget is actually done. I think this is one of the first times that there's a shutdown threatened that I can remember that HHS hasn't been part of it.
All right. Well, Mark, good question. We'll move on to Jesse calling from Rockport. Hi, Jesse. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about being self-employed and the tax credit I receive because, of course, I can write off my insurance premiums to reduce my adjusted gross income, which then determines what tax credit I get, which then determines how much premiums I pay. And there's sort of a circular relationship there and how that works. And if there's any advantage of me paying my premiums up front out of my pocket and then calculating the credit when I do my taxes, or if I'm better off just applying that full credit based on my estimated gross income. And if you could just speak to that, I'd appreciate it.
So when you're going through the application, we always encourage people, you know, be as accurate as you can, but obviously it's a projection. And so you never are going to know exactly what you're going to have for income. But you can decide at the end of the application, it's going to ask you how much of that credit that you're eligible for, if that you actually want to use. And so you can project whatever you think your income is going to be and then choose to either not use any of it or just use some of it if you want to build yourself in a cushion, or if you want to pay your, you know, all of your premiums up front. And then at the end of the year, you'd get a refund for whatever you were eligible for that you didn't use. So you don't need to make that decision always when you're estimating your income. You could also have some flexibility with how much of the credit you use.
All right. Thank you, Jesse. Our phone number again, 1-800-399-3566. Going to a tweet from Lori. Are veterans able to use the ACA?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And so I think there's oftentimes some confusion around this. And so if you're eligible for TRICARE, just like if you're eligible for Medicare or, you know, Medicaid, then you're not always eligible for the subsidies. But a lot of veterans aren't eligible for that full benefit. And so they absolutely have access to the marketplace.
Okay, a tweet. Many discussions of health insurance talk about pre-existing conditions, but most people don't understand what that means legally and how long coverage is excluded. Could you please talk about that? Going to send that back to you, Julie.
Well, it varies, and that's why this is important. It's really, unless it's written into state law, it's usually the insurer who decides. So a pre-existing condition can typically be something that you have sought, I think the way they phrase it is, either sought treatment for or should have, or a prudent person would have sought treatment for in the last 6 months or year. But some insurers can go back 5 years, 10 years, 20 years to something that you may have forgotten that you got treated for and call it a pre-existing condition. So it really does vary. You really need to be careful. And that was one of the main reasons why the Congress, in passing the Affordable Care Act, decided to just get rid of the entire thing, because it was complicated for people. It was complicated for insurance companies. There were a lot of people who were locked out of insurance entirely because perhaps something mild that they had long since grown out of, or something serious, but that they've been cured of.
Joanne, what about Maine law?
Maine law does limit how long they could actually look back for. So that's, we're going back to pre-ACA, so I'm going to my memory, but I think it's approximately no more than 18 months of a look back. And then they can pre-ex for that condition. They cannot exclude you from coverage entirely, but they can pre-ex for that condition for up to a year. And like I said, this is all prior to the Affordable Care Act. So the Affordable Care Act standards are what in place now. If for some reason that went away, then we would go back to that main law as the standard.
And just to clarify what that means to pre-ex a condition is, so, you know, the insurance company would still have to sell you a plan. But let's say you had a, you know, you were diagnosed with cancer. So the insurance company still had to sell you a plan and cover other benefits for you, but they wouldn't have to cover any of your chemotherapy or any of your services related to that diagnosis. And so that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excuse me. Linda writes in an email, I've already signed up for a plan for 2019, but I keep getting emails asking me to sign up. Why does this happen? Silence.
So I think, you know, sometimes there's automated emails that go out to everybody. I'm not sure where these emails are coming from, if it's from the marketplace or an insurance company. But, you know, if you have any doubt about whether your plan's, you know, taken effect, you can always log back into your healthcare.gov account to make sure that you have the right date. And you really need to also make sure to pay your premium before January 1st. And that's really important because there is no grace period for the first month of coverage. And so folks who are perhaps waiting to get a bill in the mail, if they're not seeing that come in, then they should really be calling their insurance company.
Joe on Facebook says, it seems PPO plans are going away and the savings for consumers are in HMOs. What should consumers be aware of in those HMO plans?
Well, the HMO plans, if you don't use an in-network doctor or in-network provider, let me say not just doctors, that means that the health insurance company could, in most places, will give you zero benefit. Whereas the PPO, they can only have, the benefit can only be like 20% less than for an out-of-network provider than it would be for an in-network provider. But there's only one carrier right now that is offering a PPO plan.
And another big difference is that most HMO plans actually require you to go see your primary care provider and get a referral before you see a specialist, versus PPO plans, you could usually what they call self-refer and just decide, oh, I need to go see the specialist. I'm going to go make an appointment. So they don't need that referral the same way.
But that does depend very much on which insurance company we're talking about.
All right.
And I should
point out
that this is true nationwide. It's not just in Maine that that narrower network plans are becoming much more, the rule than the exception. There's a new study out just today that show that narrow network plans are 72% of the 2019 market. And those sort of broader plans where you can pretty much go see any provider, at least any provider that takes your insurance, are down, are just over a quarter now.
And on the topic of in and out of network, I just wanted to add one tip. We suggest that rather than exclusively using the tool that is embedded in the Marketplace website to look up whether or not a doctor is in network or a hospital, we would really recommend that people follow the link, which will be linked to within the particular plan they're considering, and go and actually search for that, the name of their doctor on the website of each particular insurance company.
We'll go to Chantal, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chantal, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My husband and I have a college graduate daughter who her first job was with a very big company, had great benefits. She didn't pay much, and she enjoyed great benefits along with our supplemental health insurance. She has since turned over 26. She's gone with a new, very small company that offers no health insurance, and her claim is, I just can't afford it. Everything I look up is too expensive. I'm just not going to get health insurance. And we were saying, find a catastrophic plan. You're healthy. I know you talked about healthcare.gov and something called Navigator. Could you just explain what would be the best route for someone in her age group and her situation to look for the right plans and to give her the answers she needs?
Yeah, so I would encourage your daughter, you could always either call the Navigator number, which Hillary gave earlier, or you could also contact our helpline at 1-800-965-7476, and we are more than happy to run estimates. As a 26-year-old, she would be eligible for a catastrophic plan, but, you know, it's always good to run some estimates about what she might be able to qualify for other plans as well, because, you know, we see a lot of people who are able to get plans for sometimes $0 or, you know, very, very low premiums.
And Consumers for Affordable Healthcare, we are here talking about the Affordable Care Act, but you're able to help with other kinds of coverage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We can help screen people for main care as well as some other non-insurance programs.
Okay. Chantal, good luck to your daughter. An email from Philip. Since short-term insurance companies are not really under ACA federal guidelines, they are essentially creating their own rules and misleading the general public. Is there any company selling insurance that meets the need for catastrophic care, i.e. hospitalization, without all the extras and will not rip you off?
Well, I mean, the catastrophic plans are really the hospitalization-style plans. But there are limits on who can be a part of that, whether it's, you know, a limit of age 31 is the highest you could be, or a limit to your income. There's a maximum amount of income you can have in order to get a catastrophic plan. And like I mentioned before, the short-term plans do have to do things like provide Maine's mandated benefits. So, you know, it depends. You know, like we've talked about all throughout the show, the key is to really just to shop around and to figure out what's best going to meet your needs.
All right. We're going to go to a voicemail that came in before the program. This is Lynn in Portland.
Hi, my name is Lynn, and I'm from Portland, and this is for today's show on the Affordable Care Act. What I need to know is whether anybody can actually get a catastrophic plan, since there's not going to be any fee or charge associated with not getting health care, or if those plans, the catastrophic plans, are only available to people who have a hardship or affordability exemption.
There's no change in who's eligible for the catastrophic plans, Lynn. So it's still, even though we have now the zero penalty, the catastrophic plans are still for people under a certain age or under a certain income.
I want to go back to something you said at the beginning, Julie, that even though there's no longer a penalty for not having health insurance, it is still mandated under the law. What does that mean exactly? You're breaking the law, but oh well?
Yeah, well, there's some researchers who've suggested that people have now, in the 5 years we've had the mandate, sort of gotten used to the idea of having insurance. And in fact, it is, the requirement is still part of the law. That's sort of a quirk. It's because Congress was put this in a tax bill, and they were limited because they were trying to use these, you know, accelerated way to get it through Congress. They were limited to what they could do. So they couldn't actually strike the mandate. They could just take the penalty down to zero, which is what they did. But there is an argument that some people will say, well, I'm still supposed to do it. It's sort of moral suasion as opposed to financial coercion. You know, we don't know yet. We've never sort of put something in and taken it out. So it's an interesting behavioral experiment. But, you know, what we are seeing is that while signups are lagging a little bit from last year, they're not lagging very much. And that's coming as kind of a big surprise, although everything that's happened with the Affordable Care Act has been kind of a surprise.
Anecdotally, Hillary, are you seeing people who are saying, you know what, if there's no penalty, I'm not signing up?
No, I haven't been seeing many people in that position. However, it's hard to tell if folks who came to see us last year perhaps haven't called us this year for that reason. But I'm finding that many people are still coming, even though that rule has been changed, and are looking at their options at least and finding out exactly how much it will cost them and in many cases enrolling.
All right. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation about the Affordable Care Act or health insurance generally, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet @MaineCalling or post to our Facebook page. We are going to take a quick break, but before we do, a word about tomorrow's program. We will be talking about the life and legacy of George H.W. Bush. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. By Good Shepherd Food Bank, bringing nourishing food and hope for a bright future to Mainers in need this holiday season. Learn more at feedingmaine.org. And Freeport Wild Bird Supply, a destination for bird enthusiasts for nature gifts, feeding supplies, and guided tours. FreeportWildBirdSupply.com.
Many consider the Americans with Disabilities Act one of President George H.W. Bush's crowning achievements, a lasting landmark that respected people for what they could do, not what they could not do. The disability community is growing, as are its needs. Where does the ADA stand nearly 30 years on, and what needs to change? Next time on 1A.
You can listen to 1A this evening at 9 on Maine Public Radio. And coming up at 2 today is World Affairs, a global epidemic, the consequences of the opioid crisis.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your Affordable Care Act questions. My guest, Hillary Barter, who is a healthcare navigator coordinator for Western Maine Community Action. Kate Endy, Consumer Assistance Program Manager for Consumers for Affordable Healthcare, and Joanne Rawlings-Secunda, Director of the Consumer Healthcare Division of the Maine Bureau of Insurance. Also, Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News, joins us from Washington. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Joanne, what is the kind of question that you all can answer at the Maine Bureau of Insurance for consumers?
Well, we can answer all kinds of questions, not just about health insurance, but also about long-term care, about Medicare Supplement or the old Medigap plans, about disability, about life, even about annuities. So, I mean, we help people to understand what their rights are under Maine law, what their responsibilities are under Maine law. And we also allow, you know, we have a whole unit that deals with investigating complaints. So if people feel like they had a claim, for example, that should have been paid that wasn't, they can come to us and we would be able to investigate that for them.
We have an email from Pam. Please speak about penalties one may incur if Medicare is not chosen at retirement. I have had a qualified plan as a federal retiree, but now want to add Medicare Part B. I retired 9 years ago. Julie?
Well, yes, there is when you are first eligible for Medicare, particularly Part B, if you don't take it then, there is a 10% a year penalty into perpetuity. So it can get very expensive. Now, if you're coming off when you sometimes if you're still working, when you become eligible, there are a lot of sort of fine points to this about eligibility. Most people with federal retiree insurance don't end up taking Part B. So this doesn't really affect them. So I'm not sure that whether there's an individual circumstance here that might allow this person to waive the penalty. But another important thing to know about Medicare is that if you go into if you become eligible for Medicare and you select the traditional fee-for-service Medicare, you can buy a Medicare supplement. And we were talking about pre-existing condition exclusions before. They cannot deny you coverage for pre-existing conditions. But if you get onto Medicare and you go into a managed care plan, a Medicare Advantage plan, and then later you decide to leave that Medicare Advantage plan and go back to traditional Medicare, then you may not be able to pick up a regular supplemental policy. So that is another sort of thing to keep in mind when you're first eligible for Medicare. But I'd have to know a lot more about the specifics of the situation to know whether the penalty will apply. But yes, there is a penalty, both for Part B and for Part D, for the standalone drug benefit. There are penalties for not enrolling when you're first eligible.
Okay.
And I would just add that in Maine, we have 5 area agencies on aging, which are nonprofit organizations around the state and who are really the Medicare experts for the state and can help people figure out these types of questions for their individual situation and help them walk them through the enrollment process and find the best supplement plan to meet their needs. So I'd really encourage folks to reach out to their local agency.
Joanne.
And I just want to add one more thing. I was going to say the same thing as Kate, but the other thing I want to add is that in Maine, you have up to 3 years. If you get a Medicare Advantage plan, which is the Medicare HMO, you have up to 3 years to change your mind on that.
An email from Penny. My son needs to sign up for MaineCare this year. What's the best number for him to reach out to a helper? He tried signing up yesterday and had several issues and couldn't get into the system to sign up for MaineCare. Is that Consumers for Affordable Healthcare, Kate?
Yeah, absolutely. Call us at 1-800-965-7476.
And I will indeed post all of the phone numbers mentioned on today's program on our Facebook page and on our webpage. Email from Roland. My family's deductible before the ACA was $2,500. Now it's risen to $10,000. Can you explain why that is?
Well, the deductibles are all, you know, there's a huge range of deductibles. So, and if you're interested in looking at the plans by deductible, the Bureau of Insurance actually has a rate calculator that shows each plan that's available, its premium rate, its out-of-pocket maximum, and its deductible. So, and you can sort it by any of those things. So depending on what you're looking for, you know, you might be able to find a deductible that's more what you're looking for.
And I just add that, you know, no matter what plan you choose, there are certain limits under the ACA for, you know, how high a deductible can be. And so if it's $10,000, that's probably for your entire family, which means the individual deductible for that plan is probably $5,000. But you can also access, you know, no matter what you enroll in, if it's a qualified health plan through the marketplace or off, preventative care for free before you meet that deductible. And so you don't
need. And can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to add that that deductibles are going up across, you know, sort of insurance-wide. People with employer coverage are also seeing higher deductibles. That's one of the ways that insurance companies are trying to sort of keep down their costs or keep down their premiums by making deductibles higher, which is, it's sort of a penalty on people who use insurance. But then again, people there, it's to keep healthier people in the pool. Rather than raise premiums ever higher, they're raising deductibles instead.
We'll go to Rebecca, who's calling from Union. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling. I am self-employed, and every year at this time, I'm trying to figure out some creative alternative for us to get affordable health care. We've looked at the short-term plans, and my question is, because they appear to run in 3-month segments, if something comes up during one of those segments, can they deny you for the rest of the year, and then are you stuck not able to enroll in a regular plan until January 1st of the next year?
Good question, Rebecca.
Okay.
Joanne.
There are two parts to what you're asking, Rebecca. As far as, you know, can they deny you? Yes. I mean, if you, this is the, gets back to the whole pre-existing condition discussion we had earlier, that each one of these plans is considered its own plan. It's not considered renewable. And so what that means, if you were to suddenly have a car accident and you're in the middle of one 3-month plan, then you want to get another 3-month plan, all the expenses related to that car accident are now considered pre-existing condition. So that's something that people need to understand before they potentially purchase a short-term plan. The other piece you were talking about, the ability to get back onto a major medical plan, once we're outside of open enrollment, unless you have some change in your life circumstances that allow you to get a special enrollment period. If we're outside of open enrollment, then you cannot sign up for a major medical plan at that point.
Would a change in her life circumstance be the car accident you were talking about?
No, it'd be more like a divorce, marriage, you moved to a different part of the state, that kind of thing.
Okay. There you go, Rebecca. I think we have another question about short-term insurance. Bill in South Portland, go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi, thanks. Well, you know, I've been looking at this, too. I'm 58 and healthy, and so is my family, my wife and a kid. And the premiums we were looking at for a basic bronze plan, I think, through the company, is equivalent of a bronze plan, you know, like $15,000 to $18,000 a year, which is a fortune with really high deductibles. And so it made me shop around really hard. And my question on the short-term plans are, you know, we found one that was 364 days. There's only two carriers that we could find in the state. One was writing every 3 months and the other's 364. But there's so much savings, it's going to be hard to turn it down. We're looking at instead of $1,500 a month, $500 to $800, depending what plan, for almost the same deductibles. Yet I hear nothing about this stuff. And how do other self-employed people come up with $18,000 a year? You're making too much for a real subsidy, and you're not making $150,000 a year.
Well, I think the thing with the short-term plans that we really encourage is that everybody who considers buying one really take a look at what it is you're buying first. The biggest issue that we see with the short-term plans is people just not understanding what they're buying, and that there's just a lot of confusion out there. We do think there's a place in the market for the short-term plans. So we don't agree with the states that have banned them outright. But you just really need to think about what you're getting into. And like I talked about with Rebecca, I mean, there is the possibility, even though you're healthy now, that if something catastrophic were to happen, then when you went to buy another short-term plan, that whatever charges were related to what happened to you during this one, that would not be covered at that point.
Right. And that's why, the 364-day plan was the one that we're going to do, because we can go right up until open enrollment next year if we had to. I agree. I mean, it would be really bad to do a three-month plan and then get sick and not get renewed. But it kind of strikes me as there's so much money that's leaving the state of Maine for health insurance that, for self-employed people to do a 364-day plan, of which there's one company that we found that did it, and take that $10,000 a year that we're going to save and put it in an HSA, which is, tax-free, and it's just an amazing deal, really. At 58, it's how can I turn that down? The savings are it's just so dramatic. And they seem to be catastrophic plans all the same, whether you go with a bronze plan and a $10,000 deductible, or a catastrophic plan, which is actually the deductibles were even less than that, I think about $6,000 before they pay 100%.
So I would just add that, in addition to the, pre-existing condition protections, with the short-term plans, also looking at what they exclude. So as Joanne mentioned earlier, some of them just exclude pharmacy benefits, which means if you ever needed a prescription, then that's not something your plan's going to cover. Or they might have dollar caps for certain types of visits, saying, once we pay out, X amount of dollars, we're done. And so it's just making sure you read the language really carefully. And also, I'm not saying this would necessarily apply to your situation, but oftentimes we hear from self-employed people who, when they're projecting their income on the marketplace, don't always know what income to use. And so, the marketplace is really, for most people, asking for their taxable income, plus non-taxable Social Security, foreign earned income. But for self-employed folks, it's after you've already taken your business deductions. So it's really your net profit, not your gross income from self-employment.
All right. Julie, do you have anything to add about the short-term plans?
No, I was going to make that point that you really need to look at the exclusions. The reason that short-term plans are so much less expensive is because they offer fewer benefits. That's what enables them to sell them at that lower price. If you are really confident that you're not going to need any of those benefits and you better go and look at what they are, then you might be okay. But if you find out that you do, remember, you're going to have to wait until the next open enrollment to sign up for more comprehensive coverage.
All right. Thanks for your call, Bill. I'm sure others have very similar questions. We're going to go to Rick, who's calling from Auburn. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I'm recently unemployed and looking at signing up for the health insurance, and I'm wondering if it goes on last year's income or if it's going on next year's income. Last year, I made $80,000 a year. My current payroll is about $300 a week. How does that play into that for next year?
Yeah, so for a 2019 plan, what matters is your 2019 income. So at this point, what everyone needs to do is take their best guess at what that income will be. So your 2018 income is not relevant in this case. What matters is what you anticipate earning over the coming year.
There you go, Rick. What you anticipate. Thank you. We go to an email from Lori. Lori writes, my main care was cut 2 years ago and my son graduated high school. So I have no insurance and I'm on the very low end of income. We all know LePage said, even if we work, which I do, we cannot have state health care. So when I checked into the insurance programs the last 2 years, each time they gave me rates of $800 a month. Said I did not make enough to qualify for help with payments, then topped it off with telling me it. The good news is you won't be charged a fine for not having insurance because you make too little. I am dead serious. That is exactly what they told me, and nothing I could do would change that. So I cannot have insurance, and when I go to the emergency room for chest pains, I have to be billed with no way to pay. Doctors won't see you without cash up front for insurance, but no, I cannot apply for health care. Kate, Lori is who we're talking about when we're talking about Medicaid expansion, correct?
Absolutely. And so I would encourage Lori to apply for Medicaid expansion right now. And like I said, even if you get the denial, we encourage you to submit an appeal within 30 days and have that coverage be retroactive once it is implemented. So we really want people to protect their right to retroactive coverage. And they can always call us if they want any help with that. And I'd also throw out that in Maine, every hospital, because they are a nonprofit, also has to provide free care for medically necessary services for people below a certain amount of income. And so it's very likely that you would qualify for that at your local hospital as well.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for being here. And I want to emphasize that there have been some phone numbers mentioned here on the program where people can go get help. We're going to make sure and share those phone numbers on our Main Calling Facebook page and our Main Calling webpage. Thank you so much. The voice you just heard, Kate Endy, Consumer Assistance Program Manager for Consumers for Affordable Healthcare. Also here in the studio with me, Hillary Barter, Healthcare Navigator Coordinator for Western Maine Community Action, and Joanne Rawlings-Secunda, Director of the Consumer Healthcare Division of the Maine Bureau of Insurance. And joining us from Washington, D.C., Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Thank you all for being here today. Lucy Suchek ran the board. We had additional help from John Keimel. You can find past editions as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, The Life and Legacy of George H.W. Bush. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.